Okay, this is how we play. We put the studio chair in the middle. Jake turns on the music and we march around it. When the music stops, whoever sits in it gets to record from a chair today.
The start of tonight's podcast has been temporarily delayed.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is camping!
We are the wild and pretty guys!
But they're both festive, aren't they?
We are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Well, happy Ostara, Mark. thank you.
Mark, Ostara, it's the ancient festival that celebrates the coming of spring or the vernal equinox.
Oh, that Ostara. Yeah.
You thought it was the other one, your next door neighbor.
Exactly.
Joe Ostara. So, Mark, Ostara, it marks the day when the sun crosses the equator. So the length of the day and the night is equal in both hemispheres. That's a beautiful thing, isn't it? We're all balanced. We're yin and yang.
My head hurts already, but keep going.
So, Mark, the reason I bring this up.
There's a reason.
So, the vernal equinox, it falls around March 20th or 21st, which just happened.
About now.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
And it signifies the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. So, we'd love that.
Okay.
And it lasts until that summer solstice in June. But this is what I was wondering. How come December and June get all the fun?
You know, Ostara sounds like a weight loss drug, too.
It does. I see these people dancing through an office. Get your Ostara.
Keep going.
We know about the pagan roots around Christmas. Yep. We've talked about them. And there's all these festivals around the world that celebrate the solstice events. And then we also know that there are midsummer traditions. And most recently, there was a movie about them. And we know about the summer solstice. A lot of times there's parties here in the States, bonfires. And those are honor the sun's power and light. So, you know, you get winter. It's all the fear of the darkness and, hey, you know, like we got to get drunk because we're scared of the dark. Oh, now it's light out. Hey, now we got to get drunk because it's all happy and light out. But what about poor spring? What does spring get?
St. Patrick's Day.
Opening day.
Speaking of drinking.
That's where I thought you were going.
But you're right. There really isn't anything bigger around spring.
So I was like, come on. But then I thought maybe the problem is that, you know, winter means the days are getting shorter.
Right.
Summer means the days are getting longer. So it was pretty obvious to say a pagan during pagan times that even if they had no calendar, they could say, hey, okay, I understand. But guess what? It's just as dark or light here as it is on the other side of the world. That didn't make sense. So maybe that was why they don't get the same kind of love. Right. But then I started researching this, Mark, and I know you're like, why are we starting this out with this incredibly boring tirade about spring?
I don't know if it's boring. I think it's educational. I mean, one man's Ostara is another man's gin and tonic.
Exactly. Well, so I did discover the vernal equinox was meaningful in the same way that the autumn equinox signaled a time to harvest. Vernal, the March 21st one, was to evoke the dawn and the light of spring. So it was a time for nature's rebirth and the return of fertility to the land.
Wow.
So if anything in my mind calls for a celebration, it would be the reawakening of potency and virility. Yes, we are celebrating fertility tonight.
Close your eyes and think of England.
Oh, we're going to be reaching back to that one all year. I think we just stop this podcast right now. We grab our girls. We go out dancing. We'll be toasting to the vernal equinox, to the solstice, and we're going to reignite our pagan spirits. And guess what? Jake can come too. Okay, ironically, before we leave, I did discover one place where they do have a celebration for spring.
Where?
It just happens to be the country that we are exploring this episode.
What a quinky-dink that is.
It is Switzerland.
Wow. Woo!
And it is called Sechaluten.
You sound like you're from Sweden or Switzerland.
It's held in Zurich. It's a centuries-old tradition to herald the beginning of spring. Back in the 16th century, work stops an hour earlier in the winter months. But on the third Monday in April, the second largest bell of the Grünmonster would ring out at 6 p.m. to proclaim the beginning of spring. So you got to go ring the Grünmonster.
You can ring my bell. Ring my bell.
And so from this day forward until late fall, the working day would be 1 hour longer.
You can ring my bell anytime, anywhere.
Your groommaster?
Ring it.
So here's the thing, though. Why are we celebrating an extra hour of work? Those industrious Swiss, they couldn't put their watches down for 1 minute and stop working on them. So Sechaluten means the 6 o'clock ringing of the bells. Wow. The Swiss working guilds would present themselves in historical costumes and parade through the city. Yay, yay, we get to work an extra hour, yay. The festival offers insights into the centuries-old traditions and is a way to experience Swiss culture up close. Now, this is the part that I like. I don't necessarily like the part that we work an extra hour, but the festival has music ensembles, horses, flowers, flags, and the boog.
The boog.
The best part is the boog is a giant snowman. The word boog is related to the word boogeyman. So what they would do is they would create this snowman figure, which would symbolize winter. And they'd pack it with hay, and they stuff the head of it full of fireworks and explosions.
Oh, my God.
And so you ring the bell, you parade through the streets, and then you burn the boog to drive out the winter and herald the spring. You'd set the snowman figure on fire just when that bell, the Grünmonster, would strike 6 p.m. And the faster the head would explode, the better the summer would be. If it was burning and blowing up within 5 to 12 minutes, that meant a warm and sunny summer. But if it took longer than that, it meant a rainy one.
If it was less than 5 minutes, what does that
mean? I think it means like the rest of the year is summer. But Mark, here's the best part. They have a Sechaluten festival close enough to us. It is in New Glarus, Wisconsin, Mark. And it's in April. And Mark, what's in New Glarus, Wisconsin? It's the Spotted Cow beer.
Oh, my God.
Mark, we could go to the brewery. We could celebrate Sechaluten. We could burn a boog. It is the only place in the U.S. where they recreate this event.
Oh, my God.
And I think we need to do a live report for our listeners. And I think, Mark, you have to dress up as the boog.
No, they're going to put me on fire. Why would I do that, you have Bob?
To outrun the locals.
Why would I want to get burnt?
Oh, Mark, there may be a report next episode from me live from New Glarus.
So, you know, we might have to revisit this.
Yes,
yeah.
We have some time.
Okay.
We have a few weeks. Now, we have to return to the historical cities and the vibrant music of Cuba to find out what was their number one export. Now, when I asked you this festive fact from last episode, you said exactly what I thought as well.
Yeah.
Of course, it's cigars. But no, what is the tiny nation sending out 50,000 of out into the world? If you knew, you get a small but striking visual declaration representing Santa's planned economy and his highly organized collective of elf labor. Yes, it's our 4F sticker. Although this is not considered a traditional good or a product, it still is considered an export. Cuba is providing the world with doctors.
What?
Is the top source of revenue for the island and its most significant export. They lease out doctors. 50,000 of them throughout the world.
I am speechless.
I know you were thinking it was band leaders to marry redheaded women in America, weren't you?
Oh, Ricky Ricardo.
Lucy!
Oh, my God.
Yes.
You want to hear something interesting?
What? Your doctor's Cuban?
No, she's not.
Okay.
But I went to high school. I don't know if Maria Rojas is listening. Her dad was from Cuba. He was a doctor. You talking about this made me think of her and her dad.
You know what you just reminded me of? And the same thing. I hadn't thought of this either. Mary Ellen's pediatrician, when she was a child,
yeah.
Dr. Perez was Cuban, and she brought our kids to him. So the pediatrician for our kids was the same pediatrician that she had.
Oh, that is really kind of cool.
Yes. Wow. And he was Cuban, too.
This is probably one of the most, not shocking, but like just mind-blowing trivia. Of all the things you think about Cuba, that would not be one.
No.
Although, you talked about their high literacy, right? So it sounds like there's a lot of smart people in Cuba.
You know, I would have put a list of 100 things, and I don't think doctors would have ever been on it.
Nope.
But Mark.
Yes.
Let's head off to enjoy Christmas in Switzerland. You know, it's a picturesque land nestled among soaring alpine peaks and crystal clear lakes. We also discover in tonight's movie how beneath these breathtaking landscapes lies an ominous natural power. These same majestic mountains that can enchant can also break loose without warning. Ooh, beware the boog.
Wanna watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Tonight's movie is called The Last Christmas. It's from 2024. There was one actor we'll highlight. His name is Reinhard Fust. He plays Urs Hogentubler.
I love how you say that.
Hogentubler. I just remember the movies. I'm at the Hogentubler Klebin. Reinhard is a Swiss actor who originally attended a business high school. However, he also discovered he loved acting at the age of 14 and became active in the school's drama class. He began to participate in short drama scenes at various locations. And from 2004 to 2008, he toured with a group presenting full-length plays in different Swiss cities. In 2014, he began working as an acting coach. In 2018, he wrote, produced, and directed the one-act play on which our movie is based. He later wrote the screenplay, not only directed the film, but acted as Mountain Hut Warden in the movie.
And you could see how this could be a play.
Not a lot of scenery and stuff.
Yeah, it's like 12 Angry Men.
And then there's four other actors who are in this, but they might have been their first acting part in being in this movie. So there's really not a lot about them. But let's talk about the movie.
You can tell that they're newer actors. I am curious, and as you describe this film, this is one of those ones I need you to help me to understand. I mean, part of it is clear, but other parts of it, not so clear. So go ahead.
God, I thought it was a pretty straightforward movie. Now,
I know.
Now I'm wondering, what did I miss?
Probably nothing. It's like...
Son of a boog. Well, here's the premise of the movie. So there's these four high school friends. They're all sitting around having a drink. They want to plan a little winter getaway. They want to go to the cabin in the mountains and snowboard. And so they rent this cabin from Urs. And so think about the old-fashioned Airbnb where you go and you stay, but the person who owns the house actually stays with them. Urs is the cabin manager. You know, it's really interesting, though, as the movie opens, Urs is on a FaceTime with another person who's a pastor. And we learn that Urs was a ex-pastor. And you hint that maybe something happened in his ministry because he talks about, oh, those damn kids say things and it sticks with you. All of a sudden, there's this backdrop immediately, like what happened in his ministry, but quickly the kids get there.
Okay, that's one of the red flags. What was that point?
I do think later on that point kind of does become
good.
Relevant.
I hope good.
So Fabian is one of the girls who comes, and they walk into this cabin. They go right into the main living area, and Urs, they immediately get in this little tussle. Get out in the mud room. Don't come in there with your boots. Fabian's like, hey, we're the guests. You know, why are you treating me that way? This is my house, right? So immediately this Fabian and Urs sort of get at each other. So they go out and they take off their boots. The movie's kind of choppy. And, you know, I would say this about the movie up front. It's not neither praise or criticism or anything, but it's a low budget film. In fact, I think I researched that. It was made for like $200,000, like that. Again, and like you said, Bob, everything's sort of filmed in this cabin, and really almost one room in the cabin.
Right. Yep.
They finally settle down and they sit down and they have dinner with Urs. And so there's Fabian, there's Vanessa, there's Luca, and there's Michi. They're all eating dinner and they decide they want to have a dance party. I'm like, oh, a dance party in this one room cabin.
Yeah. Who's coming over?
Right. Yeah. They put loud music on. Urs, he just leaves and goes to bed.
And really fun camera angles.
I would say this about the film is I really did like the blocking of the film. Like, I really liked how they blocked off, especially near the end, and you really got to absorb a lot of facial reactions. It is a limited space because they're in a relatively small room. Yeah. They start to dance. Michi falls asleep or passes out because of too much drinking. Vanessa, who is Michi's girlfriend, asks Luca to dance. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be a slow dance. And Luca's girlfriend, Fabian, she doesn't seem to care. So they're kind of dancing this nice little thing. Michi all of a sudden wakes up. His shit got real all of a sudden. He goes from the four best friends thing, and he starts swinging a poker from fireplace, swinging at his best friend, Luca, for dancing with his girlfriend, which he asked him to do. Sort of like over the top acting type of thing. She takes a swing, misses Luca, and hits Fabian, Luca's girlfriend. And what's really funny, Luca doesn't really like get mad at him. He doesn't like say, look what you've done to my girlfriend. He's like, oh, hey, you want to go snowboarding tomorrow? Which is what they do.
Yes.
So you get this kind of violent scene. And then the next morning, Michi, Luca, and Vanessa go snowboarding. And meanwhile, Fabian's got a bruise on her head.
Yeah, poor Fabian.
Yeah.
Who did nothing.
He did nothing at all. So they go off snowboarding. Fabian is sitting there listening to her music, and Urs comes in and says, can I check your head? And, you know, she apologizes for snapping at him. And they sort of build this little bit of a bond. And, you know, he changes her bandage and everything is good. Except when he's helping her and putting the bandage on it, Luca walks in and says, what's going on here? What's going on? And Urs was like, why do people always think the worst? So let's go back to the thing about him saying about the damn kids. My second observation is it sounds like something happened in his ministry where someone has accused him of something maybe inappropriate that was an innocent thing. Because he's sort of like, why does everybody always think the worst of things? That night, they're all getting together and we're getting to the crux of the movie. They're having dinner together and there's a shake and a rumble and a tumble and the glasses vibrate in the most stupid way. And there's an avalanche.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, all the snow comes down and everything is, the walls collapse a little bit. Not all of them, but some of the walls collapse. But they quickly realize they are trapped in this cabin.
And at first, I didn't realize it was over there.
Yeah, it came over because they said they can't start a fire.
Yeah.
Right? Because the chimney is blocked. They're now trapped. No heat, because I guess the only heat was the wood-burning furnace. Luca, being the ever really brilliant person, I guess, of the group, he calculates that they have about 33 hours to live because that's how much oxygen, based on how much they breathe, the size of the cabin, that's how much time they have.
And he really did the calculations.
He did. You know, what's fascinating about this, so the cabin is completely covered with snow. They've lost all internet. Their antenna is down, but the electricity still
works. Yeah, it's still going, yeah.
There's no way there's overhead wires up in a mountain. Do they dig them underneath? It was convenient that the power was still on.
Because we could still see them.
That's right. So they start to get into this whole realization. Oh my gosh, this could be our last Christmas. And they start having some moments of, they try to rest and relax to reduce the CO2 emissions coming out of them. Fabian is resting and she has a nightmare and she's scratching at the floor. And she comes to reveal to her boyfriend, Luca, that she had been pregnant at one time. And she didn't really want to abort the baby, but her family, especially her mother, wanted to have the baby given up. And she's just frantic about the fact that she killed the baby.
Right.
And so she's having a kind of this remorseful type of thing, maybe impending death coming upon her. And so she's upset about that. Luca also then confesses his cross, if you will, that he just recently had discovered that he is adopted. He doesn't know who he really is. He feels like he's lost identity. Turns out his mom died of suicide and the dad was a drug addict and was in prison. So Fabian, who's having this regret about the aborted baby, Luca, who's sort of having this whole remorse feeling with the parents. And so starting to quickly get this, you have these five people, they're going through this traumatic event. They're starting to look and say, what about life? I think even Vanessa says, wow, this could really be our last Christmas, but she's trying to remain positive. Michi was worthless.
Right? Oh yeah. They're just like writing it off. Yeah.
I thought that everybody was going to have this last confession, but it really doesn't go down that route. Of course, they're searching all over, and all of a sudden, they found a shortwave radio. And sure enough, the power's working, so that's good.
Yes.
So they plug it in, they add an antenna, and so they start trying to radio for help. They tried clicking on SOS by clicking the clicker, by using Morse code type of thing. They're sort of sitting there and they're kind of going through this. Things are looking dire. They're getting paler and paler by the minute because of the lack of oxygen. And Urs suggests maybe they should sort of have like the Last Supper, mm-hmm. just like Jesus did, confess their sins, reconcile what's going to happen to them, they're going to die. They're a little bit hesitant to do that. Fabian asks Urs, do you think God really forgives people? And Urs says, I do. In fact, I know he's forgiven me. And so something happened in his pastoral life. It may have been true, may have not been true, but he has reconciled his life to where he is at that moment. Right. I think he's trying to do the right thing by these kids and getting them to make your peace. Think about the things you've done and come and have a piece of bread and let this be our last supper mm-hmm. together. And so I think he really is trying to do the right thing by them. And things seem to be calming down. They finally get somebody to respond on the radio. They've been yelling, Mayday, help us. He says, so we're at the Yo's Hoping Plugger cabin, right? And then there's another shift. The walls now have started to collapse around them. It's dire. Things are getting out of control. And this is where I did think the framing at the end of going from person to person, you're getting this sense of what's happening to them.
I think they did do a good job of the claustrophobia. When they're all together, it's dark. It seemed like they were getting lifeless.
They had what looked like carbon monoxide poisoning. Yeah. They had that ashy white, almost gray tint to them. Thought it was a good job. And thank God I'm not claustrophobic, but if my mom watched this movie, she would be going nuts. She wouldn't even go in an elevator. Of course, all of a sudden, then there's a knock. They hear the helicopter and they realize, they're going to be rescued. And so the rescuer opens up the hatch on top and he's like, you guys got to get out of here. We're expecting this snow to move even more. And so Urs and Lucas hold up a beam. So Vanessa goes out first, then Michi, which pissed me off to no end, Bob. Why did he go out second?
Yes. Why did he?
Why did he? But I guess he was useless. And so I guess they sent him out. But he went out before Fabian.
I know.
The woman he hit him with the poker. Yes. He goes out second. This is the stuff that gets me riled up, Bob. So those three go out, and then Urs tells Luca, you go next. And Luca's like, can you handle this beam by yourself? He goes, I'll be fine. And so Luca goes out, and of course, what happens? The cabin collapses.
Exactly.
And Urs dies. Yeah. Which, again, going back to the meaning, I think of all the people there in that cabin, Urs was the one who was most prepared to die. He had his religious life. He had made his reconciliation with his God. Whatever trauma he had gone through is done. But then they get together and they have a funeral for Urs. And the funeral, the daughter and the wife offer eulogies. And this is also, too, where the wife gets up and talks about, because it sounds like they've been separated. Mm-hmm. And she talks about how she regrets that in his moment of crisis, which, again, we never learned what it was specifically. But in that moment of crisis, she left him. And I think she realized he was a good man and she probably shouldn't have left him. Then Luca gets up and speaks. And this is where I fell in love with this movie because of this one part. You've probably heard of the author Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. Wrote the book, The Little Prince.
Yes, The Little Prince, yeah.
But I've read that book, I think, at least 7 times in my life.
Really?
And he quotes from that book, and he talks about, I have gone from you just for a moment and not far at all. When you come to where I have gone, you will wonder why you are crying. When you are looking for me, look in your hearts. Once I have found a place there, I'll always be with you. And so that's from the book, The Little Prince. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a great thing to say at that moment because right. he saved all their lives. And so he'll live with them forever. And so then after that piece, it's 2.5 years later, but they only focus on Fabian, who's become a teacher. Any quote from The Little Prince will get me.
Will get you.
And this is why I'm so interested to hear. I kept watching this thing. Something meaningful is happening here, and I'm missing it. And I don't know it was because there's these oblique references to something that happened in his past. And then the two, Fabian and Luca, have this very meaningful conversation. But yeah. it almost seemed like you get to a point, and then what? What am I supposed to take from that? What am I supposed to be feeling? And then yeah. I was struggling. There's a message here, and I'm missing it.
Well, I think for Fabian and Luca, that moment being trapped in the cabin, they are able to talk out loud for the first time some of what their fears were. Fabian aborted a baby, but she never really wanted to. And now she was able to share it with the person who is most important in her life, Luca. So that was something that was keeping her from getting closer to Luca. She had this lie, or not this lie, this secret something yeah. that happened. And for Luca, too, to be able to say, I don't know who I am. I've lost identity. I thought I knew who I was. So I think the crisis of the cabin allowed them to get out from there and maybe be able to move on from their life. I think yours, he makes an ultimate sacrifice. Now, for Mecca and for Vanessa, the other
ones, they seemed almost extraneous.
Yeah, you know they what I did. Mean? I mean, we never heard yeah. what was going on with them. Do you think it was festive?
It has to do with Christmas. There's discussion of sacrifice and there's life. I would say I didn't find it festive, though. Mm-hmm. I would say no.
I'm with you on it. Is it a little bit more meaningful because if they're going to really die on Christmas Eve, he makes this sacrifice on Christmas? It wasn't enough for me to. How'd you feel watching it besides confused?
Yeah, I think the film was trying to make me feel something.
Yeah.
There's something here and I feel it, yeah. but I don't seem to be getting it and I don't know why.
All kidding aside, it was not a well-done movie, but I kept thinking, I bet you it was a good play.
And I think maybe done a little bit better,
yeah.
refined a little bit better. I felt it was there. It couldn't get me there.
Would you watch it again?
I don't know if I would. Saying that, I found it yeah. interesting, and I am claustrophobic. It didn't bother me, but I thought they portrayed it really well.
Yeah, the last part of the movie, I agree.
But I don't think I would.
I don't think I would either. I enjoyed it a lot. If someone asked me about it, I'd say, you know what? To me, I love the fact that they quote one of my favorite authors. But I do enjoy the fact that people are out there making movies on a low to no budget and trying to do something with it. I just wondered if it was a better play than a movie. Just like sometimes you read a great book and then yeah. you watch the movie and you're like, oh my God. I just wonder in a play, to your point about everything being cramped, if the stage would have allowed for more movement, which would have maybe made it more enjoyable.
This harkens back to our previous episode when you said Rent was a better play than a movie. Now, what I will say is I take great joy in seeing how you telling me about these movies, that quote just went right past me. And your interpretation helps me to appreciate the film much more than when I watched it.
I know you were in contact with the film studio on this yes. one. I hope they listen. I would love to hear from someone who's close to the movie. I don't think I would recommend it per se, other than, again, situationally where someone would say, you want to see what a film could look like with a little to no budget. It's not a big blockbuster. Take a look at this and see what you think.
Yeah.
All right, you ready to learn how to say Merry Christmas in Swiss German?
I'd love to.
Okay, I'm going to try this. Schöne Weihnachten. Switzerland is obviously a small country, but still has 4 national languages. This means there are many different localized variations of Merry Christmas. Swiss German is spoken by 65% of the country and is the language heard in Zurich and Bern. Although it has German in the name, and Swiss classes are taught in German at school, Swiss German is a distinct language. Swiss German is a collection of dialects, and every county,
oh my God,
good Lord, has a different one. Most Germans will say it is more complex and unintelligible.
Of course the Germans would say that.
Swiss German has no standard spelling, so people write phonetically based on their dialect, so texts can vary widely. Oh my gosh. At Christmas time, you can say Frohlachen Weihnachten, which is a more common greeting and is what you say in a mixed language groups. So if multiple people from different counties. However, Schöne Weihnachten is the warmer, more intimate expression meaning beautiful Christmas.
And I know that Weihnachten is German because our friend Andre, who has his film festivals, the Weihnachten film festival.
Right. Yeah. Weihnachten, yeah. That's right.
But first, Twist, a word from our sponsors.
After these commercial messages.
It's a commercial.
A crummy commercial?
These commercials are stupid.
Commercials.
Bob, what are you doing?
I'm working with Alluvium.
Alluvium? You mean A-L-L-U-V-I-U-M? Interesting. What is that?
Wait. Let me guess. Is it rare?
Yes.
Is it valuable?
Very.
Is it in the ground?
Kind of.
I know. It's a precious metal.
Wrong.
It's precious, yes, but not a metal. Alluvium is the rare partner who offers us valuable services by providing landscape design and construction for the care of your grounds. So you know the plantings in my yard? Mm-hmm. Those stone steps, the deck, that's all been designed by the owner, Brandon Losey. Also think about Trout Valley, those brick paths, the gardens, and the new beach, all Alluvium, all the time.
Can they help me with my natural spaces?
Absolutely. Sue said she'd do anything to get you out of the house. But I'd contact them now before things heat up for the season. Call 224-422-4510 or look up Alluvium Landscapes in Barrington, Illinois.
Alluvium Landscapes, building the great outdoors.
So let's talk about some customs, because you know there's going to be some.
Oh, good.
So this first one. Rural people in Switzerland occasionally eat cats and dogs during Christmas.
Oh, Mark, now you've ruined the food for Switzerland. Come on.
It is estimated that around 3% of Switzerland's population, or about 240,000 people, eat dog and or cat meat, and it is most popular during Christmas times.
Oh, my gosh.
Cat appears on traditional menus in some areas in Switzerland. It is cooked for the festive season like wabbit with white wine and garlic.
Ooh, dog, I like my cat with white wine and garlic.
Dog meat goes mostly into making sausages. Dog and cat meat is not sold, but it is legal for people to eat their own animals.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, look, quick shout out to Christy Nome.
That is not going to be part of our international Christmas potluck.
I don't know. All right, moving on. Switzerland has its own version of Black Pete, Krampus, and Father Whipper.
Oh.
It's called Schmutzli.
Oh, I like Schmutzli. That one.
Schmutzli. Schmutzli. He is dressed in a brown robe and has a blackened face and isn't as controversial as Black Pete, as he's supposed to be blackface because he's supposed to be dirty, which is a translation of his name. So,
Schmutzli means dirty. Yeah, okay, means dirty. Got it.
He also did not have the exaggerated features. He's a strange-looking individual with a black face, red eyes, and a black cap. His job is to beat naughty children with sticks. He is Zamaclaw's mean, dirty helper who kidnaps naughty children and whips them with a broom. Good Lord. Over the years, and despite his still sinister appearance, Schmutzli has become less scary. Schmutzli is a symbol of the evil spirits, and the winter processions would use a loud noise and lanterns to drive them away. So you make a lot of noise, bang pots, Schmutzli will run away. Schmutzli brings a touch of fear to the holiday. Every Christmas should have some fear, which makes the whole thing a little more exciting. One legend says the original Schmutzli was an old woodcutter who rescued Zamaclaw's gifts when his burlap bag got a hole in it. the woodcutter is he's rewarded, keyword, with a lifetime of playing bad cop to Zamaclaus's good cop.
So that's a reward. We're going to call you dirty.
And you're going to beat children.
Yeah.
That's your reward. In Switzerland, there's still a tradition where you light real candles on the Christmas tree.
Oh,
wow. Lighting candles on Christmas trees has been a long-standing tradition in some Swiss churches, preserving a century-old custom and a tangible link to past generations. They use Christmas tree candles and candle holders with weights. Why, it's still scary.
Yeah.
You must place them strategically so there is nothing above the flame that can burn. Smart. The candles are pinned to branches and are often connected by a fast-burning fuse for simultaneous lighting. In many homes, it is the Christ child who flies in and lights the candles on the tree. I never heard that before. Now for some food.
Ooh, good. It's not dogs or cats.
Oh, my God. I'm really sorry. I should have left that for last. A pastata is a food from Switzerland that's a meat pie. It is meat with vegetables in a wine cream sauce that is baked in a rectangular cake-shaped puff pastry pie filled with sausage meat, mushrooms, and other things. Now we're talking Bob and Mark language here. They're usually filled with a cream sauce and contain meats including veal sausage and sweetbreads. Traditionally, pastata is a special dish served on Christmas Eve. The festive version of the dish adds boozy raisins, juice, and brandy to the creamy sauce. There's an Alpine version that contains potatoes, leeks, apples, onions, and cheese. Some versions add bacon and herbs. It is known as cholera, comes from the Swiss Canton Valley. The dish is not related to the disease directly, but one theory is that people stayed home and cooked with stored ingredients.
Oh, because they had cholera. Oh, they didn't go out.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah, right, yeah, they didn't go out.
You know, that's my online name, Boozy Raisin.
Boozy Raisin. That'd be a great nickname. There's also a traditional side dish of a vegetable that is unique to the region, cardoons, which are from the thistle family. So they are
prickly. And they eat them?
These wild thistles are part of the Christmas Eve celebration. The artichoke and cardoons are varieties of the same plant. Although you ever see an artichoke in the ground, it is kind of pricky. The taste is reminiscent of celery and artichoke with a hint of bitter. A lot of people say that Mark, he's a good guy, but just has a hint of bitter. Cardoon gratin is a classic Christmas dish.
You know, it's fascinating to me sometimes when you hear of something like the last episode we talked about that yuca. I'd never heard of that. Now, you said you've seen it. I've never heard of these before. Why would anyone want to eat something that's part of the thistle family? But that's just me.
Finally, there are the grützli, which is the Swiss German term for biscuits or cookies. Baking is a central, deeply rooted Christmas tradition throughout Switzerland. Cookies are an important part of the Swiss Christmas tradition. During the Christmas season, families bake a variety of traditional cookies, which are often shared and gifted.
Oh, I see. So the Grützli is a name for like all the cookies. Right. So they just, the tradition is bake lots of cookies.
Lots of Grützli. You probably wouldn't even say, do you have any cookies? Say, do you have any Grützli?
Grützli.
Yeah.
Do you have any Grützli for Schmutzli?
Schmutzli. Jeez.
Schmutzli? Hey. Or what's his name?
Let's do 12 Gutsi beers for of Schmutzli? Christmas and try to say that.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes! This Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
At least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Handing you. Heilige Stadt, fröhliche Weihnacht, fröhliche Weihnacht. Einfach Zeit zum Zusammensein, ich wünsch kein mehr vorbei. Fröhliche Weihnacht, fröhliche Weihnacht. Weihnacht, das heisst Mitternacht, drum dürft der Song im ganzen Land.
That is Weihnachtslied by the Glaxis Christmas Singers. We've done it again, though, although there are many good Swiss Christmas songs, especially a few from the 60s and 70s, like Le Rojas Magis, which is the Magi, by Sheila, or La Fille du Père Noël by Jacques Dornac, about a love affair between the daughter of Santa Claus and the son of Father Whipper.
Ooh, that'd be kind of a fun.
Interesting. We selected a more recent song from 2019 that was first heard on a commercial. Just like the Christmas song we featured in Japan, Weihnachtslied, was written for and used in an advertising spot by Glaxis, which is Switzerland's largest online realtor. Glaxis is known for their quirky Christmas commercials, which tend to disrupt the traditional idolized Christmas themes. They tend to focus on family dynamics and classic settings that you expect in a holiday commercial, but with an unconventional twist, like a family's perfect Christmas dinner turns out to be an unappealing vegan goose, or maybe a dog, or a family preparing for Christmas but discovering they are trapped in a Galaxis commercial.
Oh, that's funny.
It is funny. In 2019, the retailer took an aim at another family trope, the annual Christmas song. So they brought together four popular Swiss singers to perform a Christmas song, which results in some unharmonious Christmas chaos. With a wink, the commercial was funny but had a dash of self-irony as the featured song became a genuine Christmas hit.
Oh, that's really funny. Because that song sounds really good.
It does. It landed as one of the top 10 most successful Swiss songs. Proceeds from the sales of the song went to support Pro Infirmis, which means for the weak, a Swiss welfare organization that supports people with physical, intellectual, and psychological disabilities. The group is called Galaxis Christmas Singers, but is composed of artists Bashi, Fabian Louvis, Carlos Liel, and Stephanie Heinzmann.
Swiss famous. People would know all those. Yeah. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
I love that. So it was supposed to make fun of it.
Yeah.
It becomes really popular, and it raises money for a charity. Oh, my gosh.
I know. Great. It's perfect. You imagine the marketing guy for that one was like, oh, my God, I thought I was going to be fired. So let's talk about our pierogi initiative.
It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
Puts out food for Santa.
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana.
So local foods are often used to symbolize a country in words and music. We can think about hot dogs and hamburgers are featured in marketing and advertising to help depict summer's childhood nostalgia and just Americanness. In researching our Latvian delicacy, pierogi, we find that to be the case for our little Baltic region as well. Pierogi, often used in Latvian popular culture and mentioned in folk songs as a means to represent home and hospitality, right? We know from...
So like we think of like the hot dog, yeah. Apple pie is America.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pierogi, so fun.
Well,
that's
remember, Sabine told us from the Latvian embassy that pierogies isn't just a Christmas food. They serve it at all kind of cultural events and festivals and weddings. So we've learned that there's a Chicago connection to this whole thing.
What?
There's a Latvian American band from Chicago called Chicagas Pichisi, which means the Chicago Five.
In Chicagas, Latvian?
Yes. Chicagas Pichisi, Chicago Five. The band was formed in 1961 by Latvian exiles who moved here during the Soviet occupation of their country. The band was very popular in both Latvia and within the Latvian community in the U.S. for many decades. Their music was often smuggled into Latvia on cassette tapes, so it became a symbol of resistance and a reminder of a free Latvian identity. Most of Chicagas Pichisi tunes are lighthearted and humorous, but they did have a few bitter songs about their longing and hopes for their home country. In 1988, they released an album called Made in Latvia.
Wait a minute, it's 28 years later? Wasn't they originally in 61?
61, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So 27,
that's a pretty lengthy tune. Yeah,
they've been around. They were around. The song Made in Latvia, while slightly tongue-in-cheek, is still a patriotic feel-good anthem filled with national pride. It's about a man whose life is full of imported products, an electric shaver from Japan, Italian boots, a kitchen table from Denmark, but his beloved is made in Latvia, from the ends of her hair to the bottom of her feet. He praises her as authentic, hardworking, and superior because she is made in Latvia. The lyrics highlight how Latvian women are self-sufficient and value demanding work, like fixing a roof, pickling cucumbers, and weeding needles. Okay. The song contrasts the foreign goods as plastic while his partner is genuine. It suggests that Latvian culture and its people are enduring and not cheap. The chorus describes seeing his beloved with her red and white smile, which are the colors of the Latvian flag. The lyrics emphasize the singer's desire for connection for his roots and appreciation of his Latvian identity. So, what's the metaphor they use in a song to epitomize her strength, resilience, and traditional skills?
What?
Making pierogi.
Yes, I knew it.
But in the sense, pierogi functions like apple pie in American culture. They are not trendy, but Latvian's folk tradition strongly influence its modern identity. Pierogies are deeply rooted in a powerful symbol in Latvia, which in turn makes them even more appetizing.
Just that whole thing you just described, it's fascinating to me that it has a Chicago connection.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? A band that goes on for like 30 years. We just picked pierogies because they sounded appetizing.
So I want to see if I can find some bootlegs, cassettes, or albums of the Chicago's PCC, Chicago 5.
We have to look for some tapes.
So do you think it's possible that the Jackson 5 from Gary, Indiana got influenced by the Chicago's PCC?
Oh, they stole. I'd be like, hey, you stole our name there.
Oh, for our next episode. All right. Ready for some trivia?
Yes.
It's trivia.
Trivia.
For such a small territory, Switzerland is a treasure trove of curious facts and is not all about watches and chocolate and bank accounts. From quirky customs to rare inventions to unusual politics, it has it all, including the Alps. For example, we could have asked about how in Switzerland it is required for Swiss citizenship to be familiar with the different types of Swiss cheeses and their places of origins, and that you'll be tested on it.
To become a citizen?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So okay. If you're thinking about wanting to leave America and going someplace, yeah.
I do like Swiss cheese though. I really do.
I do too. I like a lot of cheese. For rare inventions, we considered questioning you about Zurich's morning, MOURNING, vending machine that dispenses tissues, rosaries, condolences cards, and even a tiny music box playing You Are My Sunshine.
Wait, it's a vending machine at a funeral?
Right. I'm like, yeah, mourn. That's what I said. That's why I spelled it.
Now, could you imagine if the stuff gets stuck and the vending machine falls on you and kills you?
The irony there. Or to demonstrate its unusual politics, we thought to grill you on the fact that Switzerland is the only country to recognize the dignity of plants in its constitution.
Good thing.
Instead, for considering it all, we decided to ask you about an event that nearly started a war between the village of Appenzell and the city of St. Gallen in 1579 when a printer forgot to include something on Appenzell's coat of arms.
So this is like a city and then another city.
Correct.
And the one city asks the printer in the other city to print their coat of arms.
Right.
And they left something off.
Correct.
Almost, and it almost started a war.
Almost started a war. What did they leave off? If you know this answer, we have a prize that you will crave. With its soft curves and handmade craftsmanship, we promise our sticker will delight your palate. It is round, bright, and bursting with rustic charm. It will also melt perfectly when the heat is applied, especially with that waxy rind covering the co-hosts. That's us.
Yeah, I think that's us.
They even smell faintly of curdled milk. Plus, we know our stickers are made better when punctured with holes. They can be yours with a winning response. Please note that all stickers will be individually wrapped, and they pair well with most any crackers. So send your answers to festivethefans@gmail.com. This is by Charles Dickens. And I went back and I tried to see if, I don't know if we ever did this one before, and if this is a repeat, I promise, but no. It just struck me. But as I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year by Charles Dickens.
I don't think we have done it before, though. I do know that one. You know what I'm shocked by, though? I thought you would do, after hearing this, a quote from The Little Prince. I was like, I was going to guess. I go, I know where you got your quote from. That's so funny.
Yeah,
there's probably not a good Christmas one, though.
There's not a Christmas one. But join us for our next episode when we travel to the Balkan Peninsula. We are headed to the former Yugoslavia and home to Bosniaks, Croats, and Serbs. We are visiting Bosnia-Herzegovina, born from the 1990s war and still a painful chapter in the country's modern history. We are here to watch the film Sabina K, which is inspired by a true story, and you can find it on Tubi.
Sabina K and Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Okay, close out, a Danish laugh, an Italian tear, a French Noel with Coco near, Spanish guitars, a Finnish night. Each film we watch is pure delight. Festive stories fall like snow. It's why we love where we go. When spring, summer, or fall are here, we're watching Christmas throughout the year. Our spirits lifted. We're festive fans finding Christmas in foreign land.
That's beautiful. You know, set that to music, Mark, and sing it.
I might need Jake as backup.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Bob. It's time to go home.
Have some cheese.
Have some cheese. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Mark.
Actually, we're done.
Done, done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.